Good afternoon, everyone. And different from what was said right before the song came on, this is a live edition today of The Exchange. So I'm not going to try to make my guest sound like she's not here live. but welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. And my guest in the studio today, Yvette Landry. I don't know where I want to start with Yvette, because a number of people that are familiar with her in the area may have been familiar with her as an educator, teacher, or they know her as a very talented musician and singer-songwriter. But she's added a new piece to her life, which is also author, that we are going to talk about a little bit later in the show. But welcome, Yvette. It's great to have you here today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's fabulous. I do want to go back, though, and start early on with you and when music entered your life.
You know, I was talking to Tom Vonshi the other day, and he was
in. Tom's still doing stuff on he's still doing the radio.
Well, he's doing a class over here at UL for a little while, and then I think he's going to be at LSU Eunice. But he was interviewing me for one of his communication classes.
Ah, I forgot he was doing that.
He said something to me after the interview or during the interview, and I thought, God, if ever I do an autobiography, this is what the title of it's going to be. All because I bought a bass guitar.
All because of, there you go.
Yeah, it seems like everything that's happened exactly has been because of a bass guitar. So, in terms of music, I've always been a musical person. I started playing piano when I was 3 years old.
And, so anybody, because your dad?
Oh, I come from a family of musicians. Yeah. My grandparents, actually, my dad's family. The Landrys, my grandfather, his father, and his uncle had a band, and
what kind of music did they play?
They played swing and jazz, basically in the 20s and 30s and into the 40s.
In this area?
Yeah, here, New Orleans, all up and down the Gulf Coast. They were a traveling band. And my grandmother, who was an Hebert from New Iberia, all of her brothers, Wilton Hebert, Noe Cap, they all had bands as well. They had a band. And my grandmother was the youngest of the kids, and so she was the only girl left at home. And the story that I remember is that her older brother, who was the leader of the band, wanted a banjo player, and he was out of brothers, so he got my grandmother to play. But eventually the band that my grandfather was in and the band that my grandmother and my uncles were in merged to create the Bill Landry Orchestra. And so they met, and they actually played music together for a while. And then once they got married, I think my grandmother said, enough of that nonsense.
Oh, that's so it was music that brought them together.
Yeah, and, you know, I've done a little bit of research in the family tree on the Hebert side of the family. And actually, for five generations, there have been musicians all the way through. Hmm. So there's a long line of
women.
Music.
Women also, when you get back to those further generations?
I'm not so sure, though. I have men mostly, I mean.
Because, you know, it's – With your grandmother playing, I mean, that there wasn't a lot of women who were actually, not necessarily that maybe they weren't playing at home, but getting up on a stage
right,
at that
exactly.
time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And she played banjo, and I knew she played banjo because I had a picture of her playing banjo. But what I found out not very long ago was that she also played guitar. She never talked about it. That she didn't. I don't think she liked it very much.
Yeah.
Maybe it was awkward for her, but I never knew that.
So. I love that she played banjo.
Yeah.
You know, because in this area, too, you didn't hear – I mean, you'd hear about some of the banjo players coming out of New Orleans with the jazz stuff.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard a lot about a number of banjo players out of this
area. Yeah, and so. I don't – you know, it's unfortunate, but I don't have any recordings of her playing music. So I don't know the style that she played. But, you know, she did play for a little while. So
Do you have – I mean, there's a number of instruments you play. Do you play a banjo? Do you have one?
I own a banjo, yes. Yeah. I own a banjo. And for a while, I kind of messed with it a little bit. But – Cajun music kept pulling me back, and if I was going to pick an obnoxious instrument to play, I decided for the accordion. Yeah.
There you go. Are you accordion?
Yes.
So piano, you started young.
I did. I started on piano and played piano all the way through high school and did competitions and you know, in elementary school I started playing clarinet, and then I ended up playing woodwind instruments. I played the flute and the saxophone and the oboe and did all that stuff. But thinking back, I think I enjoyed the competition of playing music more than I enjoyed playing the music. I think I enjoyed the competition more. And when I graduated high school, I actually was accepted into the United States Collegiate Wind Bands and toured Europe.
Wow.
Yeah, for 6 weeks. We went to six different countries, and we actually recorded an album in London. And that was
– So what did you play?
I played clarinet.
You played clarinet in that band.
Yeah. And
so how did you even – do you remember how that came about or how you knew about trying out for
that? I think my band director had submitted my name, and you had to go and you had to actually try out.
Yeah.
And they chose two people from every state to represent the United States. And I was one of the two chosen, and it just so happened that the other one that was chosen was not able to go. So I was the only one from Louisiana that was there.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're competitive.
I am very.
Yeah.
I was before, in high school, I was also an athlete, and I really,
that was my next question.
Yeah, that was more of my passion was athletics.
What did you participate in?
Volleyball. Okay. And then I also played some tennis in softball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Well, that fits.
Yeah. So when I got back from Europe, I closed the piano and I closed the clarinet case, and I was done with competition. There was no place, for me to compete. So I was done with that and put it in and never thought twice about it again until about 9 years ago. And 9 years ago, I was actually, it was probably about 10 years ago, I was teaching at Episcopal School of Acadiana and with a fellow teacher, Anita Huval, who is married to the Huvals from Brobridge. And, there's a whole bunch of them.
Huvals.
Yeah, exactly. And she comes up to me one day and she says, Yvette, I'm looking for a bass player. And I thought that was the most bizarre question on the planet because I had nothing to do with music and never in my life had I played any kind of stringed instrument or anything like that. And I said, Anita, I don't know any bass players. Aren't you married to the Huvals? I'm sure from that brood, they got to have one of them that plays the bass. And she goes, no, you don't understand. The French department wants to do a song for National French Day, and we ran out of French teachers for instruments to play. So we were thinking about, well, who's crazy enough to try and do this? And let's ask Yvette. She'll do it. She'll do anything. So I said, well, no. She goes, come on. It's one song. It was a Zachary Richard song. She said, there's two notes, and all you have to do is go boom, boom. And I said, well, I don't have a guitar. I have one for you. So she gave me the guitar. She gave me the CD, and I took it home, and I practiced those two notes for about a month. And the day that we were supposed to perform at school, I think it was Hurricane Lily.
Oh,
or
Lord.
One of those hurricanes came through. So we never got to perform it. She took the bass back, and that was the end of that. that was it. And then about a year later, my father got sick with cancer, and I couldn't play sports anymore because we were doing a lot of traveling back and forth to Houston. And I needed something to do to keep me busy, and I just thought back, and I said, that bass guitar was kind of fun. So I went out and I bought me a bass guitar to do nothing more than just kind of play around, pick, see if I could do something with it at home. And then Brazos Huval told me one day, I was passing him on the street, and he said, there's a jam. Mitch Reed has a jam. And I said, who's Mitch Reed? And he's like, you don't know who Mitch Reed is?
Yeah.
And I said, no. And he goes, yeah, there's a jam. So it happened one day that I was passing in front of the store that they used to have off of Gloria Switch.
Yeah.
And I got down and I walked in, and Mitch Reed was – well, there was a guy behind the counter, and he goes, can I help you? And I said, yeah, I'm looking for Mitch Reed. And he gives me this look, and he goes, what for?
What did I do?
Exactly. I said, well, somebody said there was a jam here. He goes, oh, hey, I'm Mitch Reed. Nice to meet you, So he brought me into the back where the jam was on that porch, and when he opened the door and I walked back there, it was just something – even though I'm from Southwest Louisiana and this is part of our culture – was not so much a part of my family's culture, and I had never experienced anything like that before. And there were 30, 40 people in there from 4 years old to 94 years old,
yeah.
And everybody was playing an instrument. And there was just this sense of, oh, my gosh, these are my people, It was just – it was amazing. It changed my life forever. It really did. And so I started – going every Saturday over there, I'd sit in the corner.
It was a nice jam. That was a nice place.
And I'd sit in the corner just kind of plucking away. And then one day, Drew Seymour walked in. And I didn't know who Drew Seymour was at the time. Drew plays with the Pine Leaf Boys and a band called Timon and some other bands. But he walked in and he was probably, I don't know, 18 at the time, something mm-hmm. like that. And he was just so full of energy, and he sat down and he started playing the guitar, and then he got up on this upright bass and he started playing that, and then he picked up the accordion and he started playing, and I was just in awe. And I mm-hmm. remember thinking, I don't know who that kid is, but I want to do that. I want to do what that kid just did. I want to yeah. walk in and be able to pick up any instrument here and play that. And I just, you know, immersed myself in Cajun music and Cajun culture and instruments. And I think at one point I was learning four or five instruments.
Do you know, I remember the first time I saw you. And oh. it was Folk Roots. I used to be with Folk Roots. And we were doing a fundraiser in Ville Platte.
Yeah.
And we had the big, community center there. But Winky Okwan came up to me and he said, hey, come in the back room here. I want you to see somebody at this jam. You need to hear her. So he said your name, and I didn't know who you were.
Yeah.
And went back, and there was a couple other people standing there just like, oh, my gosh. And the conversation was how quickly you were picking up, and you had an accordion with you, and how quickly you were picking up things just that day.
Okay.
And then the next thing, you came to Folk Roots.
I remember
as one of the scholarship students.
Yes, and I remember getting the phone call because I don't think I had applied.
Mm-mm.
I didn't even know.
You had been – what happened was is that you had a number of people call on your behalf and as an educator really wanted to get you involved
yeah.
Because they knew what – how talented you were. But the other thing is that as an educator that you would be passing that on.
I just got the chills. I remember yeah. that phone call that said
it was
– oh, you're the one who called
it,
me.
It was me.
I just remember somebody calling me saying that you know,
yeah.
we have a scholarship for you to come.
It
do
was,
you want to come? And I went and asked my principal, my headmaster.
Yeah.
I said, you know, can I take a week off of school to go and learn? And
yeah.
she said – oh, she was so supportive. It was Lynn Blevins. And she said, absolutely, go.
Yeah.
And it changed my life forever.
Well, I tell you that was thank you to Winky Okwan.
Oh, thank you, Winky.
Because Winky had pushed that, and then Jody, who was the director, Jody Hebert, you know, we discussed it, and I just happened to be the lucky one to be able to make the phone call.
Oh, well, thank you for the phone call, Cheryl.
but that was all for their doing. You know, that was their doing. It was it was Winky who had really – and, you know, it's interesting. I think back to that day, the other person who I met the first day for the first time out there was – Blake Miller.
Oh, my gosh.
And Blake was probably, I don't know, 15,
yeah,
you know, something like
yeah.
that. And his dad brought him up and said, hey, I want you, you know, that's my son over
oh,
there.
What a talent.
And it was like but he was just really starting to get out more in the public and play in front of people. And it was just kind of these, you know, those two things stuck in my head, you
wow.
know, from that. Yeah, that was a real neat thing.
That was amazing for me, for sure.
Yeah. And then I'm going to tell you. Let me tell stories of Yvette Landry's
life. Oh, gosh.
No, but also at that camp, if I'm not mistaken, is kind of how the beginnings of Bonsoir Catan came
Absolutely.
About, correct?
Right, yeah.
You and Christine
I had,
sitting
yeah.
around the fire.
Right. I had
yeah.
just met Christine not that long ago, and we connected, and we were talking about playing music together, you know, and we were just standing there around. It was the last day of camp, and we were standing around the campfire, and she said, you know, Yvette, we should start a band, you know? And I think Anya was there too, and we
yeah.
were talking about it, and we said, yeah. And we didn't know Christine Balfa was behind us, but she was, and she heard it, and she just stuck her head in the, you know, in our little circle, and she goes, if y'all start a band, I want to play with y'all.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at Christy going, oh, you know, really, Christine Balfa? And yeah, that's exactly how Bonsoir got their start. Was
yeah.
that for mm-hmm.
But and that's always fun to see when things just, you know, aren't real planned out, but they just come together because they were supposed to come together.
It was meant to be, and, you know, it's 8 years now that Bonsoir has been together, and we've done two CDs together. We've traveled all over the world, and, you know, hopefully we'll be in the studio in the next few months to
Wonderful.
Put out another one.
What was the first band in terms of Cajun music? Was it
the Lafayette Rhythm Devils?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It was
playing
3 months into playing bass guitar. I had gone to, you know, had the only jam I had ever been to was at Mitch Reed's shop,
yeah.
and somebody said, you know, they have a jam at the end of the month in Rain at the some kind of hall. I forget what it is now. So I went over there. I had my bass and I had my amp, and I was thinking it was going to be a jam where everybody sits in a circle and everybody's playing at the same time. And I walked into, I think it was the American Legion Hall. I walked into the hall, and there's this old guy sitting at a table. And I walked in. He's got a notebook and a pen. And I walked in and he goes, "What's your name?" I said, "Yvette, what you play?" I said, "The bass." He goes, "Go sit over there. I'm going to call you when it's your turn."
Oh, Lord.
And so basically what they were doing is anybody who walked in, they put your name on a list and they picked the first five people. So you had a fiddle, an accordion, a guitar, a bass, and drums.
Yeah.
And if you were the first five on the list, you got up and you went play two songs. And then if somebody was after you on the list, you gave up your spot and somebody else went. So it was basically a band. And they had – the lunch, they had a supper, so everybody, all the people from Rain, you know, were there, and they were sitting. Everybody was sitting there with their arms crossed, just looking at you like, "What you got, little girl?
Yeah.
Do something." You know, I thought I was going to die. I really did, and that's where I met Don Lejeune, who is the drummer for the Lafayette Rhythm Devils, and he heard me play there, and I guess he told Randy that he had found a bass player. So I get a call the next couple days later. From Randy Vedrine, and he's like, "Hello." I said, "This is Randy Vedrine." And I had no idea who Randy Vedrine was, and he said that he played with the Lafayette Rhythm Devils, and they played at Randall's, and would I like to go and play? And I remember thinking, holding the phone, going, "Well, hold on a second, let me check my calendar," and putting the phone down and just screaming at the top of my lungs. And, you know, I picked it back up, and I said, "Yeah, I only lived a few blocks from there." So I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll go." So I went and I played. I've never been so nervous in all of my life, but I played that gig and I was just so excited and so proud. And
did you have a chance to rehearse with them prior?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, Lord.
Not at all. Not at all. Because that was the Friday night or Saturday I had gone and the gig was the Wednesday. So I didn't know. I didn't know any of those people.
Hmm. And, was Christy in it then?
No, it was Pepe Carmelo.
Oh, Pepe was it? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was Chris Singer, Pepe Carmelo, Randy, and then I remember I was so excited and I was walking out the door. I was leaving because the gig was over, and Randy comes chasing me down. He goes, wait a minute, and I said, "What?" He said, "Here." I said, "What?" And he put, you know, some money in my hand, and I said, "What's that for?" And he looked at me like I was stupid, and he goes, "Well, you get paid." And I said, "What? You get paid for this?"
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I've been with him ever since, That was it. And that was 3 months after I started playing the bass.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, at that time, you were also, you were playing, experimenting with learning how to play the accordion.
Mm-hmm.
When did guitar?
Guitar came right around the same time. After I saw Drew, I was determined to learn everything. So I went to work, and I had a friend of mine and I asked her, I said, "I want to learn how to play guitar. Do you know anybody that has a guitar?" She goes, "Yeah, my son has a guitar. He hasn't played it in 20 years. You can borrow it." So she gave me her guitar. And then my great-grandfather's fiddle was hanging on the wall as a piece of art at my mom's house. So I went and I said, can I? And she said, "Sure." So, I took it off the wall and got it kind of tuned up a little bit. And then I asked my aunt, I said, "Do you know anybody that plays accordion?" And she said, "Well, my sister-in-law's husband used to play and he passed away and I think she still has his accordions." So I borrowed that accordion.
Wow.
So I had, I begged and borrowed for everything that I had, and eventually I was able to, when I knew that accordion was something that I really wanted to stick with, I did that. But I remember the first time I went to a jam playing the guitar, I knew a C, a G, and a D chord. And I was just rocking those three chords.
Yeah.
And then somebody who was playing, they played a song with an F in it.
Mm.
And I didn't know how to play an F. So every time they would play the F chord, I would drop my pick. And then I would pick it up and just start again because I didn't know how to make an F. So, yeah.
I love those kind of stories. And like the story where you had to check your calendar, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember then when you got to hear like an A minor or an E on the guitar? Because those are cool chords.
Well, that's just about every song that I've ever written was when I learned a new chord.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you play something? You brought your guitar today.
I did.
Can you show us how you have progressed?
Well, I don't know about progressing on the guitar. What I've also learned is that you get a lot of people to play with you who are a lot better than you, and it makes you sound really good.
Yeah.
But, so
what do you want to play? Something from the earlier days, or you want to play something that's coming off?
Okay, yeah, well, I can do, I started writing songs about 3 years ago, and
play off your first CD or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what? I'll do. How about I do the? I was going to do Friday Night Special, but how about I do the first song I ever wrote?
Okay.
TV took the place of campfires, walking underneath the bright white stars. Walking in the woods, turned into smoke-filled bars. Nobody takes the time to write love letters anymore. Guess the way things used to be means more now than it did before. So close your eyes and take me to the place where the black water flows, back to a place and time where my memories are gold. Well, nobody knows their neighbors or visits with the folks on Sunday night. Sitting at the table, turned into drive-through signs. And sitting with family telling tales just don't happen anymore. Guess the way things used to be means more now than it did before. So close your eyes and take me to the place where the black water flows, back to a place and time where my memories are gold. Back to a place and time where my memories are gold.
Yeah. That was Yvette Landry. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange, and my guest today, as I just said in the studio live, is Yvette Landry. When did the voice as an instrument come in?
That came in probably
because it's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, about 4 years ago, I went up to visit Jenny Hawker, and she had a voice workshop that she was doing at her house. And I didn't think I could sing. I really didn't. I love to sing, but every time I tried to sing with songs on the radio, they were too low, they were too high. It was just not in my range. And you know, sometimes something will be staring you straight in the face and slapping you in the face and you still don't realize it. And I went up to her house and she said, what do you want to get out of here? And I said, well, I want to be able to, you know, sing a song with Bonsoir Catin. That's what I want to do. And she says, well, why don't you think you can sing? And, you know, I told her I just never in the right key. And she looked at me and she goes, well, doggone it, girl, change the key. Uh-huh. And I just looked at her and I said, can you do that?
Yeah,
and she said, well, of course you can, you know. So that was, I mean, that was as simple as that was a huge epiphany for me.
Oh,
but I guess because I didn't really, I played bass. I didn't, you know, I don't know. I don't know why it didn't, the connection didn't make, but it didn't. And, you know, once I started doing that and finding that I actually had a range and knowing what it was. So she gave me a song called Black Cat Bone, and she goes, you take this song back to those girls and you tell them that you want to sing that song. And as it happened, we were going into the studio and we were looking for another song. And so I remember sitting, I was at Christine's house and we were kind of rehearsing, and I think Christy said, well, we need one more song. Well, what could that be? And I just sort of raised my hand very timidly and said, I have a song. And so I started, you know, I started singing it, and they just kind of joined in, and that was my song that I sang with Bonsoir Catin.
Yeah.
And then from that, you know, from that, I just started singing a little bit more.
It'd be fun for people to go back and listen to, you know, knowing the story now. It's a lot of times it's fun to go back and
listen. Yeah, and if you would hear the original recording that she gave me, it was by a blues singer called Jessie Mae Hemphill. And she was a solo artist, and she would play guitar, and she had a tambourine on her leg, and she would hit her foot. And it sounds nothing like, you know, the Black Cat Bone that we did, but it kind of felt good to do it your own way, you know? Yeah.
It would seem to me that the process that you have been doing now, kind of your second coming of music in your life, you know, from when you were young, that the way you learned the instrument was different from...
Totally different. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why I just really just embraced the Cajun music so much, because I could play by ear.
Yeah.
And when I was in taking piano and all these other things, you had to read music, and you had to practice, and you had to do dynamic, and you had to do it a certain way, because on the paper it tells you this is when you get loud, this is when you get soft, and this is the tempo that it's supposed to be at. So it was very much, it was controlled, you know, and it was.
Was that difficult at all for you to go from that one process to the other?
No, but this, just being able to listen and play what I heard was just it was freedom.
Yeah.
It was something I didn't know existed. I didn't know that you could do something like that, you know?
You, you're very confident.
Mm.
Although sometimes it may not feel that way. But there is a certain level of confidence with you that has allowed you to just really, and I think attack is a good word, but, you know, just to go after whatever it is that's intriguing you at that time.
I don't know if it's confidence. I think it just might be ignorance. It's just not just, you know, you just
But you do
go.
It.
Yeah.
Other people wouldn't.
That's one thing I do, and I don't know why. It's just part of who I am. It's just, you know, I'm going to go for it. You know, I don't really know what's going to happen, but I'm going to do my best, and that's all.
And this isn't in a competitive manner the way it was when you were younger. There's not that.
No.
You know?
It may be more just competitive with myself. Just,
exactly.
Can I do this?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Let's go do it kind of thing.
You know?
And there's never any disappointment, because if you give it 100% and your best is terrible, you've given your best. So you're just terrible.
But you say, Yvette, you seem to succeed at whatever it is that you're going after. No, but I mean that there is musically, you know, when we look at people that just naturally have a gift, and I'm not saying that you haven't worked hard, but boy, there's something just in there for you with music.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I think of how quickly it goes back to that first time when a lot of people saw you play.
Yeah. You know, I started teaching lessons, and I think that it wasn't until then, because I just assumed everybody learned like I learned. I really did.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it wasn't until I started teaching that I realized not everybody learns the same way and not everybody learns at the same pace. And that's okay too.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. You so right now you are currently playing, if we just look at the bands, you're still with Lafayette Rhythm Devils.
I am.
You're with Bonsoir Catin.
Yes.
You're doing the thing with Piuk, with Al, and
Frisson.
Yeah.
And then I'm also doing I have my own band, Yvette Landry Band, and then I'm in a band called Trocanai.
And who's in that?
Al Berard, Christine Balfa, and my son Trevor Landry, and I play accordion.
So what's Trevor playing?
He plays drums.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, Trevor's my drummer in my band as well.
Now, do you – okay. So
talk about natural talent.
Yeah, that he does.
Yes,
huh?
He does.
Yeah, well, that was passed down. You know, I wanted to talk about the band separately, but then you have your band.
Uh-huh.
And then are some of the gigs that you're going out, do you ever just go you on a stool with a guitar, or you on a stool with
I usually do somebody else. I usually do two people. I've done solo gigs before, but I'm not confident enough in my playing abilities to – I'm more of a rhythm player. I'm not a lead player on guitar. So I do – every Thursday I play a duo show at Buck and Johnny's in Brobridge.
But it's different people that play with you.
Yeah,
there.
Which is amazing, because each of them brings their own interpretation of the song and their own style of music and their own instrument, you know. Yeah. So sometimes I'll have a steel guitar, sometimes I'll have a fiddle, sometimes I'll have another acoustic guitar, or sometimes I'll have an electric guitar.
And tell me about that process. Do they get – you make sure they have a copy of
Absolutely
your CD?
Absolutely not.
No, they just show
nothing.
Up? They just show up.
Yeah. It's very organic in its process, and I think that's what makes it so enjoyable and so much fun to everybody, because it's not perfect and – you get to laugh at your mistakes and you get to go, whoa, did you really just do that, when they do something incredible, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And it's never the same, so you don't ever get bored.
That's a wonderful
yeah.
idea to do that.
Yeah, it's fun.
Hmm. Can you do something else for us?
Yeah.
I like to take advantage when somebody is here live with their instrument.
Sure. I'll do Friday Night Special okay. now. It's another slow one. I mean,
that's okay.
Okay. Three years has passed since the day you packed up and gone. Sometimes a woman gets tired of living alone. Jim Beam, Jack Daniels, and Cuervo, yeah, I had them all. But they're only your friends till the clock on the wall says last call. Friday Night Special is all that I am. A bottle, a bar stool, one willing man. Yeah, everything's changed since we've been apart. Yeah, the deeper the pain, the harder the heart. We left that smoky old ballroom right at daylight. And I knew it was wrong, but baby, it felt so right. I said, are you married? And you smiled and said it was through. But the ring on the finger you're wearing spoke nothing but truth. A Friday Night Special is all that I am. A bottle, a bar stool, one willing man. Hell, everything's changed since we've been apart. Yeah, the deeper the pain, the harder the heart. Yeah, the deeper the pain, the harder the heart.
All right. That was- was Yvette Landry, Friday Night Special, and that was off her first CD, Should Have Known. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. Make sure to check out the website. Great podcast. If you missed a show, you want to hear one again, you can go up to Programs or Podcasts, click on and find the program that you're looking for. Also a great place to check into international, national, regional, and state local news on there, too. And always a great calendar to find out what's going on in the area. I also ask people, because we are listener-supported, to check that out on the website also. It is a secure website. You can help us out there. You can also give a call to the station here at 337-482-KRVS. So Yvette Landry, now those last two songs you did, you went from some of the classical music you talked about growing up and then just being grabbed in the heart by mm-hmm. some of the local music out of this area, the indigenous music. This style. When you're performing on your own, where did that come into your life?
I guess growing up, that's what a lot of the stuff I listened to. You know, I loved country music and I loved Motown music. Those were the two styles that I listened to, and swamp pop. Yeah. I loved swamp pop. So, and that's kind of what we had going on at the house at the time. So, you know, I asked myself that question. I do not know the answer. I don't know when I sit down to write that I'm even going to write a song. It just kind of comes to me. Mm. And when it comes, I don't even know what's coming or what style it's going to come out in.
Yeah.
But that seems to be country. The old school country seems to be what's happening. So
do you do that sometimes, that you just decide, gosh, I'd like to write a song right now, and you sit and try? Or is it because something is coming in your
something,
brain?
Something's coming in my brain. I've never sat down and said I'm going to write a song ever.
Yeah. I don't know how some of the people that do that, like when they go up to Nashville or whatever, and that's – they go in at 8 o'clock.
You know, I'm teaching a songwriting course over here now, and that was
– that through the traditional?
Yes.
Through Mark's? Okay.
Uh-huh. And I lost 3 weeks of sleep trying to figure out how I was going to teach a songwriting class when I don't know how I'll write a song. But, you know, like just for an example, the latest song that I wrote, I was cooking supper for my son, and I was browning some meat. You know, I was going to cook rice and gravy, and somewhere in between of flipping the meat, I just thought, I got to go get my guitar. And
yeah.
And 30 minutes later, I had a song and burnt meat. You know, that's just.
And does that come into the song, or maybe
no.
That'll be the next one?
Maybe so. I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know.
But you do have to take advantage of it when it comes to
yes.
you, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. When it's coming, it's coming.
Yeah. So. I'm going to see. So can we put on, because you talked about you do have a new CD that's going to be coming out shortly. It's not out yet.
Not yet. No, I'm expecting it on Friday or Thursday.
Fabulous.
So, yeah.
Okay. Let's listen. Could you describe this next song? Yeah, You're Right, which is track 7, Cecil. That's quite a different for
yes,
you.
Yes, it is.
Can you give us a little history of that, how that song came about?
You know, the song was written is actually kind of a personal experience. Most of the songs that I write about are just observations that I've made, you know, some of it a little bit of truth in my own life. But this particular one is actually a true story for me. And what I heard in my head was not normal, not the normal country style. And so I wanted to put an accordion with it. And so I wanted to, you know, Gino Delafosse. So I called Gino and asked if he would do it, and he said absolutely. And then we needed a drummer who could pull off the beat that I wanted, and so I asked Gino, and he said absolutely, I'll do that too. And I said, well, gosh, if we got Gino playing drums, then we got to get Pop to play bass. So Pop said, sure. And, you know, and then I remember I recorded with Joel Savoy at his studio, and he goes, well, what else do you want on this song, Yvette? And I said, well, I want guitar. And he said, well, who do you want to play guitar? I said, who do I want? I want Little Buck Senegal. That's who I want. And he goes, well, okay, get him. I said, he doesn't know me. I don't know him. I can't. And I remember Joel just looked at him. He goes, well, doggone it, Yvette, make it happen.
So
I called around, got some, found somebody who had his number, and I called him, and he answered the phone, and I said, Lil Buck? And he goes, yep. I said, this is Yvette Landry. And I swear you could hear crickets chirping in the background. And I said, I play with Bonsoir Catin, and the crickets, you know. And I said, Christine, I play with Christine Balfa. nothing. I said, Buck, do you have any idea who I am? He goes, nope.
No.
I said, well, I'm recording a record and I want you to play on a song. Do you want to play? He goes, what time you want me there?
Isn't it fabulous?
It was
amazing.
You never know. Amazing. So he's on it. And then, you know, once we got Buck in there, I wanted some Hammond B3. And, you know, of course, you got to get Eric Adcock to do that. So it's basically a completely different band.
Yeah.
And, you know, what was amazing about that is that Buck and Gino had never played together.
Really?
Ever. And so I went home and I told my mom, I said, I'm pretty darn excited. I said, I took country, zydeco, blues, and, you know, I took a little bit of this and put it all together and made it work. And, you know, I mean, I didn't make it work. It just worked. But, you know, I felt like I was sort of the instrument that kind of brought it all together.
And created that wonderful experience for those two to play
together.
Yeah,
yeah. Amazing.
Wow. That's
it blew me
nice.
Away, too. It
yeah.
blew me away. Yeah.
Well, let's listen to the end result.
Yeah. I'm pretty this sure it's number seven. Cowboy boots and a pocket knife. A 53 gets in a 58 mic. Thinking about what an ex told me. Said you ain't nothing and you'll never be.
Yeah, you right, huh? That was Yvette Landry and featuring Gino Dalafos, Corey Lil Pop Ledet, and Eric.
Lil Buck.
No, didn't you have Lil Pop play on there too?
No.
Oh,
Little
I thought you
Buck.
Said you did.
No, Lil Buck.
Well, I knew you said Lil Buck.
Oh, Pop Esprit.
Oh, you had Pop Esprit.
Yeah.
Oh, you had. I'm sorry, Pop, from Gino's band.
Yeah.
Oh, I misunderstood you.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, I know you said Little Buck. Oh, great. What a great song that was.
Thank you.
So let's say it again. You had Gino De La Fosse, you had Pop Esprit, you had Little Buck Senegal, and you had Eric Eckhart.
Yes.
And you on vocals.
Yes.
Boy, that had to be fun.
That was amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
What an experience. You know, I had never Little Buck, when he came into the studio, it was so funny because he didn't know who I was, had never heard the song, whatever. And he walked in with his we actually recorded at Chris Stafford's studio right there because Little Buck lives right next door.
Now, had he played prior with Eric on some things ever?
Buck and Eric played together before. And he walked into the studio and he had his amp and he sat down and he broke out his guitar. And I was like a kindergartner just sitting on the floor with my legs crossed and, you know, my guitar. And I said, okay, so here's how the song goes. And, you know, I'm playing it. And you know, he just – it's like I said, it's just organic. It just takes on its own life, you know. And I remember when he left, he looked at me. He goes, y'all taught Lil Buck some stuff today. I ain't never played nothing like that before. And, you know, I mean, it was just –
very
I didn't
cool.
sleep for 3 days after
I
that.
Bet. I bet. Well, you need to, sometime after the CD comes out, you need to have that happen live.
Yeah, I think, you know, CD release party, I'm going to see if I can get.
Now, what's the name of the CD?
It's called No Man's Land.
No Man's Land. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. I want to mention, too, people can check Yvette's website at Yvette Landry. That's Y-V-E-T-T-E, Landry.com. You can find out about that new CD, what's going on in terms of her schedule for gigs, and where you can also access her first CD she put out. I do want to get to talking about, because this is the other part of your life, mm-hmm. and I don't want to run out of time, but the newest thing that you have going on is you have authored a children's book. And I say children, I'm going to read because I can't do any better than Daryl Bork.
I know.
So let's just take from the master. But I do want to, because this is great what he wrote, but this is from Daryl Bork, with the Ghost Tree. Yvette Landry has created an incredibly rich cautionary tale. In this story, she honors the power of memory and storytelling. Here is a tale that serves both children and adults, the adventurer and the observer. Her narrator is one who is held between what Pop told him and his own experiences of living in a world that is always dangerous and foreboding. He knows the swamp of experience that every culture and every individual faces in growing up. It is called the real world. In many places. Sometimes the danger zones are singled out by gingerbread houses or goddesses with snakes for hair or trees that turn children to stone and eat them up. The Ghost Tree reminds us that the world is a dangerous place and that the story is an incredible place to go to for wisdom or just a touch of plain good sense if we are not ready yet or old enough yet for wisdom. So thank you, Daryl Bork.
Yes, thank you so much. You know, it's so funny because the whole reason why this story ever came out, I was actually playing a gig up in Maine, and I was sitting with a 3-year-old on a little potty in a bathroom, and he wanted me to tell him a story while he was, you know, doing his stuff. And so when Daryl wrote that and sent it to me, you know, all I was doing was just kind of trying to keep the 3-year-old entertained so he could take care of business. And Daryl wrote this thing, and I went, oh, my God, I did that? Wow.
But, you know, but that's the thing about – because, you know, and I say children's book lately because this isn't just a children's book.
No.
It's, you know, depending on what age you are and where you are in that developmental process in life, you are going to take something different mm-hmm. from this book.
Yeah.
And it serves a different purpose for, you know, whoever that is reading this.
Yeah.
So you're sitting that day with a little one.
Yeah.
And after that, then did you think, gosh, I'm going to put this
– No, actually, we don't have enough time to go into the whole story. But anyway, the little boy, I went up there and they kept calling me Asian lady. It was a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old and they kept calling me Asian. No, I'm sorry, 2 and 4. And they kept calling me Asian lady. And I asked their dad, I said, why are your children calling me the Asian lady? And he said, I've been telling them for 2 weeks that the Cajun lady was coming. And they don't know what Cajun is. So they think you're the Asian lady. So, you know, I created this story for this little kid just to keep him occupied, and I had a really great weekend. And when I got home, I thought, I want to do something nice for the people because they put me up in their home, and it was a great weekend.
So you were playing music?
I was.
Some people that put you up?
Okay. Yeah. And so I got home and I said, I'm just going to type up the story so he'll remember the Asian lady.
Yeah.
And I'll put a couple of other stories that I enjoy in a binder with a little note saying, anytime you find a story, just put it in this binder and you'll have a book of stories that
cool.
you love. You know, so that was the reason that I even typed up this story and didn't just leave it over there, you know, in the little potty room. And in the process of getting people to just, you know, just kind of check it over, making sure I had spelled everything properly, it was suggested that I actually do something with it. And I said, well, I am. I'm putting it in a binder and I'm sending it up to Maine, and, you know, and said, no, you really need to do something with this. So I went to visit an author, a published author, and I sent her the story and I said, look, I don't want to waste your time. I need you to be brutally honest with me and tell me whether or not I should do something further, you know, because I'm perfectly happy with just putting it in a binder and sending it over there. And she said, you know, I am also a librarian at an elementary school. And she said, I've read this story each day to a different grade level.
Wow.
And you could hear a pin drop while I'm reading this story. She said, you should definitely do something with this. So I said, okay, well, what do I have to do? Let's sit down and you can tell me what I have to do. So she, you know, she kind of went through the whole thing about how you find a publisher, you can self-publish, blah, 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 the whole thing. So that was on a, I don't know, one weekend. So, you know, I thought, well, maybe next summer I can do something and, you know, it's not on the front burner, whatever. And so that following weekend, I went to Christmas shopping. Where did I go Christmas shopping? I know I told you.
You went and saw Kelly Guidry.
Oh, yeah. I went to Kelly Guidry in Brobridge to get something for my brother. And while I was there, I had this meeting fresh in my mind. And I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to do a book, I'm going to need an illustrator. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be cool if I could get Kelly Guidry to do this? So I asked him if he would be interested, and he said, absolutely, you know, tell me about the story. So I told him about the story, and he said, Yvette, I would love to illustrate the book, but come see. And he brought me in his house, and he pulled something up on the computer, and he turned the screen, and on the screen was a picture of a snapping turtle in a swamp. And I looked at it, and my jaw hit the floor. I said, oh, my gosh, this is exactly what I see in my head when I think of my story. And he goes, this is my friend Cullen Bernard. Here's his number. This is who you need to illustrate your book. So the next day I called Cullen and I said, Cullen, you know, this is Yvette Landry. You don't know who I am. And, you know, Kelly, give me your number. And I'm thinking about doing a book. And would you be interested? And he said, yeah, absolutely. That'd be great. And I said, well, don't, you know, nothing's going to happen anytime soon. This was in October.
Yeah.
Not this past October, but the last one. And I said, nothing's going to happen soon. So just, you know, thank you and I'll be in touch. Well, the following Friday night, I went to perform at the ACA. And when I walked out, I saw a friend of mine, Brittany Broussard, who I hadn't seen probably about a year and a half. And so it was just sort of a, hey, how you doing? Oh, my gosh, what are you up to? I haven't seen you in so long. And she said, well, you know, it's been really busy. My husband and I opened up this publishing company last year, and I just went, oh, you got to be kidding.
The stars are aligned.
They were all aligned, you know. So before the next day, I had a meeting with her husband, and there were three people that I needed to talk to. And he read the story, and he said, yes, absolutely, we want to publish your book. Now we just have to find you an illustrator. And I went, you're not going to believe this, but I already have one.
That's right.
So, yeah, so this was supposed to happen.
He captured – I mean, when you read the words and read your story in here, his people – the trees, just the scene. I mean,
if I could have had a projector coming from my head and projecting on the wall what my vision was as I was, you know, as I was writing. And that's one of the things that when I write, whether it's music or anything else, I do see a movie in my head.
Ah, that's interesting.
I do see the movie. And if you could have projected on the wall that movie that was happening in my head, you would get this book.
Huh.
It's that.
He got it that close.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. His illustration is fabulous.
Yeah, Cullen is really good.
It's really good. I'm curious. I'll go back to the statement, and I know we're going to have to wrap up here in a couple minutes. But the statement you made about, you know, you see that film. Do you sketch at all?
Yeah, little. Not much. I have in the past, but it's just one of those things. I only have so many hours in the day.
Well, you only have so many hours in the days, but you've got more done in the past, you know, than a lot of people that I know. So watch for Yvette Landry to, you know, jump into illustrating and art, visual art. Again, I do want to mention, go to Yvette's website, YvetteLandry.com, and you can find out about the book, about her new upcoming CD, her premiere CD that she had put out, where she's going to be playing.
Facebook, too, is a good way to get it.
So it's the Ghost Tree, and it's a hauntingly beautiful book.
Yeah.
I mean, because it has that whole haunting quality to it.
Yeah. On the back is a little sort of excerpt that'll sort of tell what it's about without really telling what it's about.
For as long as anyone can remember, the children of
Ilabay, where my grandfather was from,
have been warned to stay out of the Catahoula Swamp. It was not because of the giant alligators that would love nothing better than to make you their next meal, or the water moccasins that wait with venomous fangs ready to strike the minute their territory is invaded, but because folks believe that children who enter that swamp never return.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great, great story and a beautiful book. Yvette Landry, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
And, you know, if you take anything out of here besides wanting to check out all the wonderful art that she's involved in, remember to always take those chances.
And, there you go.
And go for
jump
what you want to go for in life.
Just jump.
That's right. We're going to go out with another cut off her soon-to-be-released CD, hopefully this Friday, called My Next Mystery X. Have a good week, everybody.
I sit here at this table with a drink in my hand, looking for a willing soul just to be my man. Well, you've got pretty blue eyes, and you'll do, I guess, 'cause I'm always looking for the next Mr. X.
The 14-year-old pianist on this week's From the Top seems so focused, but I guess looks can be deceiving.
One time I was playing a second movement of a Beethoven sonata, and it was really slow and really long, so I kind of got bored, and I started daydreaming. And by the time I was done, I was still playing the second movement.
I'm Christopher O'Reilly. Meet this talented, self-effacing young pianist on this week's From the Top.